Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Jim.
Mark, do we have a special offer for our listeners?
Let's do it. The 2022 half off is the promo code 2022 half off. Go to VRTrader.com. You've got a bunch of newsletters to choose from there. And I also want to disclose that I'm not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice, but we do produce that newsletter and have now for over 40 years.
Trouble in the Middle East. What has that done to the stock markets?
Understatement, right? Well, you know, war creates inflation. Our friends at the Fed can't do much about that. In fact, Powell made some comment about that in one of his question and answer sessions regarding international risks. So, you know, there goes your inflation control. And, you know, we've talked about this on and off air, you know, about inflation not being controlled by interest rates, other extraneous factors. You know, crude oil goes up and war breaks out and supply chain issues and, shortages of, oil drive those prices up, as I just mentioned. So, you know, it's just a wild circus out there in terms of the officials trying to explain away things they can't really control. But, I got to tell you, it's one of these scenarios, another one of these outlier events that we've continued to experience here. You know, it started with that, we had the COVID outlier event. We had that balloon, you know, flying over. We got the border invasion in the U.S., the banking crisis. You know, nobody talked about that. That was coming in March. We got this CBDC digital currency out there, which is floating around. We don't know when they're going to institute that. You got the issue with the U.S. Congress unable to keep a House Speaker on the job. Of course, you got the war in Israel, and we also have these fake government statistics that keep coming out. Most of them are, you know, around the job numbers. So where's the next outlier event? You know, nobody, you know, supposedly some insiders, there's an article here I'm going to post in my newsletter about how the invasion, the Hamas invasion really was being predicted or known about, or it was something that wasn't such a outlier event that obviously the powers that be didn't pay attention to some of the research that apparently was out there. But anyway, what's the next outlier event? You know, a polar shift, an asteroid. You know, we just had didn't we just have another earthquake? Where was it, in Pakistan? I'm trying to think now.
Afghanistan.
Afghanistan last week, right. You know, we had Turkey before that. Thousands of people killed. I mean, you know, you think war is bad, that earth opens up, and, you know, you lose a country. So, outlier events are just all over the place. I mean, this is life, I guess, and this is life on the planet Earth. So human-related or not human-related, but, you know, right now everybody's running scared. But, you know, we've got the good old government out there that could print money, manages the plunge protection team, and, you know, will do what they can to create the aura of stability and financial security as best they can. But I'm not too optimistic.
The Fed believes is the only tool the Fed has to control inflation higher interest rates, or do they have other tools?
Yeah, I'm a Fed expert. I got to open up the creature from Jekyll Island's book, G. Griffin's book, you know, that pretty much tears apart the institution. But they have a series of shenanigans that they perform and they don't talk about. And some of it came to light under the Freedom of Information Act years ago, trying to figure out what they're doing or not doing. But, you know, I don't have all the details in front of me, but they went out and bought, you know, stock or bonds and Harley Davidson, for example, that came out in that Freedom of Information Act report. You know, they're doing stuff privately. They don't just talk about it. I mean, if I was in that question and answer session with Jay Powell, I mean, I tear them apart. I mean, I just do my research before I went in there. But, you know, their involvement with the Plunge Protection Team, which is the working group of financial markets, and if it's not that, it's the Equity Stabilization Fund, which was created, you know, back in 1934, part of the Gold Reserve Act. No one talks about that. They're involved with, you know, moving all kinds of money around, including gold and stocks. We know Japan does it. We've talked about this 100 times. They control the ETF and stock market over there. But the Fed's out there, directly or indirectly. And last I read, you know, China's selling its treasury bonds, and that drives interest rates higher unless the Fed absorbs all that or the treasury prints more money to bail out the Fed. It's wild. You know, people just don't get it that the government is active in the markets. GATA.org, my friends over there have been talking over for decades about the suppression of gold prices through government action. And, you know, we just had that, you know, recent court case where a couple J.P. Morgan traders, you know, got put in jail for playing around with, I think, the silver market. And, you know, I'm sure they didn't do it with their own money. So, you know, there's, you know, what could I just say? You know, we have markets that are manipulated and individuals are manipulated. You know, you've got the the crypto case that's on trial right now, as you know, with the FTX situation. Of course, that was more of an individual, but a lot of, you know, it just, well, you know, where there's money, there's evil doers and good doers, and, you know, we just got to understand that, you know, markets are played with, and what's so obvious is not so obvious. So, you know, to answer your question, yeah, the Fed does all kind of funny things they don't talk about. They don't, I'm sure they wouldn't admit it, even though there is some proof that they do it. So we're just raising or lowering rates. You know, the main thing is contracting or expanding the money supply. You know, one of the things that our friend, you know, back in 1980 did, the Fed chairman back there, was to tighten the money supply a little bit. So less money supply around, businesses can't, you know, conduct business, and that really helps slow things down. So far, the charts that I'm reading, the money supply has been pretty much held up, a very slow decline, but Powell and the Federal Reserve is, you know, not really pulling that back. And if they really pull back the money supply, restrict credit, a lot of things they could do, they can really send the country into a depression. You know, we saw the Fed raise rates during the Great Depression in the 1930s, which is one of the reasons I love the Fed. I mean, they just make great decisions at the worst possible time. But, you know, so the rates is just, it's really a smokescreen. I mean, if anything, raising rates creates inflation because companies have to build the extra costs into their products and services. So it actually helps the inflation scenario, not reduce it. The only way to, you know, I'm not saying it's the only way, but if they really restrict credit and banks can't lend or stop from allowing them to lend money or making it so onerous to do so, that's one way to really slow things down. Of course, it doesn't solve the supply chain issue we mentioned a few minutes ago, but this whole thing, you know, I'm sitting here just laughing, watching financial television. What's the Fed going to do in November? Are they going to stand still? They're going to raise a quarter. And what do the odds say about a raise next year? There are actually some statistics out there that show when the Fed actually lowers rates, that usually comes at a time where they're forced to lower rates, even though that's not the only, you know, tool they have. And the market usually sells off, doesn't go up, because things are so bad that that action on their part of lowering rates is confirmation of the problem, and the market realizes it and crashes. I mean, there are some instances of that. So that'd be really perverse, right? That suddenly, you know, with something, whether it was this war or some other variable hits, the Fed forces to low rates and people think the market's going to go up, but it won't, at least based on history that I've read. So it's really, and, you know, I just think the market is a little bit of a fraud, right? Anyway, we've had, you know, the Russell 3000, which I mentioned last week, was at 97% of all investable securities. More than half the stocks are down for the year. You know, the S&P was up a little bit. I have a chart that I actually did in a PowerPoint this morning for a bunch of investors, or I guess viewers of the PowerPoint over at the Money Show. It comes out of Sarasota, Florida. But, you know, you had 54% of the stocks in the Russell 3000, which is, like, 97% of the market, down. And, of course, you got this magnificent seven, those seven stocks, which I keep talking about on financial TV and radio. But most stocks did poorly. So it was a phony move. So if you own the S&P, yes, you benefited a little bit up because it went up, but it was weighted by those seven stocks. But if you're an individual stockholder, was it about 1,600 stocks that comprised the Russell 2000 that were down for the year, you weren't too happy. So you had to either be in the index or those seven stocks. But I just think that a lot of the rally, you know, was engineered. As far as I'm concerned, the plunge protection team, the government, bought the seven stocks and drove them up to distort the averages to make it look better than it really was. And, you know, we do have the presidential election next year. And, again, this government intervention factor. But I think ultimately this whole rally, and particularly confirmed by the non-performance of most of the stocks and the Russell, says to me ultimately whether it's next year, the year after, or sooner, we're going back to the lows from the COVID lows, which would bring the S&P down to about the 2200 level. And, you know, that's, you know, quite a distance, you know, from where we're at, you know, right now. So the S&P now is around 4300, so virtually could be cut in half potentially. And that's the risk. I could be wrong, but, you know, that's the risk to the downside here in the next couple of years. So, I'm sure we're all talking about the Israeli-Gaza situation, but I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think more is coming. We got China, Taiwan, and what's really going to happen with Iran here. And we have the invasion of the southern borders here in the U.S. Some have gotten to Canada as well, I hear. You know, there's plans, you know, in place, you know, to undermine this country, Canada, whatever can be done. So does China only have a hand in it? Is it Iran? I don't think it's Russia, but, you know, you never know. And we got some problems ahead of us. But, you know, I guess if the government can put out phony statistics, drive the stock market up, with government money, and you know paint some lipstick on the pig, so to speak, people may shrug off some of these other risks out there. So I'm a bear. You know, I don't really like what I'm hearing and seeing at all. And again, what's happening in the Mideast, I think is just the tip of the iceberg. I just think, you know, unfortunately, it could spread here to the U.S. You know, so many of the people that have crossed the border illegally, there could be, you know, all kinds of groups there looking to subvert the country. They could have weapons. It could get really nasty. So I hope I'm wrong, but what the charts are telling me, the action of the government with regard to the Fed and the control of the oil supplies and all the nonsense that's going on, they just mismanagement at the highest levels. And I think that's why most stocks didn't do well in the last year and a half. And there had to be a bit of manipulation there to make things look better. Now, in this environment, hard assets are good. You know, you got to own gold and silver and, you know, resource-related commodities. There's going to be shortages. I still think the agriculturals are going to be doing okay, regardless of what the U.S. dollar is doing. Real estate is good. Why? Because it keeps your money, hopefully, out of the banking system. And the banking system, I still think, has a lot of risks that they're not talked about. But the charts that I look at of banking stocks and of the small regional stocks looks awfully bearish to me. And then you get someone like Jamie Dimon from JPMorgan Chase, and he's not too happy. Of course, when you read into his details, he's more concerned about international risks, which, of course, you know, he talked about this even before this Hamas-Israel thing blew up. So more of it's coming, unfortunately. And you know, we're not even talking about Ukraine or Putin or anything like that. You know, we sort of forgot about that for the moment. China's got that base in Cuba. You know, as I mentioned a few moments ago, they're selling treasury bonds. Oh, the real interesting story I put in the newsletter, and I apologize, I'm ranting and raving a little bit, but and it's not new, but it's been going on. Apparently China is asking for their pandas back. A lot of the pandas that were at zoos and stuff around the country, and not only in the U.S., were on loan, and in the last few years, they want all of them back. And the reason the pandas were sent over, supposedly, was to encourage goodwill between the countries and, you know, economic stability, friendship, and all that kind of stuff. So if they're taking their pandas back, that's sort of an ominous sign, I think. So I was surprised. I saw that article the other day, and I posted it. And at some point in the near term here, I don't know if it's 6 months or 2 years, whatever, all the pandas are going to be back in China. So I thought that was really an interesting article, why China would want all their pandas back when they're originally sent for peaceful purposes. So fun stuff out there, Jim. Interesting week.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, are you surprised gold or oil didn't skyrocket after the unrest in the Middle East broke out?
Well, technically, it topped out just before the Mideast blow up. I mean, the chart said you hit a little, you got to $93 a barrel, and the chart said you hit the top of the resistance, and we sold up there. We, in the newsletter, you know, we took profits, and in fact, one of our big winners here on paper, of course, because it's in the newsletter, and it's a hypothetical portfolio. We're not managing money, but we had a recommendation in Pioneer Oil and Gas, and Exxon just came out. They're going to be buying out Pioneer. And that was a huge move. That thing just exploded, you know, 30 points to the upside on the Exxon story. But we sold that on that story. But prior to that, we had exited our oil stocks because the chart said we hit a resistance level there in the low 90s, and we should see a pullback. So the pullback was underway, and then the story hit. They bounced, but they didn't manage to get back to the high. So technically, they're still in a little toppy pattern here, and I think it's temporary. And maybe it's reverse next few days and just break right through back to the upside. But we saw it as a trading top, and I'm still very much a bull, you know, with all the politics and what's going on in the world, not only now but previously, shortages and so forth. I mean, I'm a big bull, and, you know, it may take a couple, 3 years or more, but, you know, it's, I think crude could get up to $200 a barrel ultimately and certainly take out that record high of 140 that we saw, you know, was it back 2007 time frame, I believe it was. So, yeah, I just got to trade them, and we got our trigger finger, you know, to reestablish some of the positions. My favorite, one of my favorites, as I mentioned numerous times on the show, is Occidental Petroleum, because Warren Buffett owns 25% of the stock, and, you know, he's buying it here for not crude oil at $93 a barrel, but probably for $200 a barrel, because he's got a much different time frame than most investors. I love it, but as a trader, you know, we took our profits a little bit looking to get back in, and I do have to say that we're keeping that position on the, in the newsletter about Occidental and being influenced to a great degree by Warren Buffett. So for the most part, I'm out and looking to get back in.
What's going on with the cryptos?
Well, we had, you know, a little volatility there. What else is new, right? You know, what could I say? We had the chart up in front of me a few moments ago. We had a little shakeout here again. I can't explain it other than the markets are very volatile. They do zigzag around, and I still like the Bitcoin very much. You know, I have it in our newsletter. You know, using the surrogate, not the actual Bitcoin, the GBTC, which is the trust. And as we know, our friend Larry Fink over at his whole organization is looking to get that legalized in terms of an ETF. So you got to be positive. I just think, you know, it's trading around. Looking at the chart, it's just zigzagging back and forth here, trading back and forth, you know, $25,000 to $30,000 range. The GBC is trading, you know, in that, you know, 15 to 20 range. It was as low as 8, you know, about a year ago when they really washed out Bitcoin. So, you know, just a big picture comment, more positive. It trades like anything else. It's volatile. I think you can hold some long term. I'm not too worried about it. But you know, you do have powers that be, you know, looking to get that ETF underway. So BlackRock is Larry Fink's company. I did mention a moment ago. You know, they just want to get that ETF going, and that will eventually happen. I can't imagine it not happening since they manage trillions of dollars and they applied to do so at the SEC, so that would be a big, you know, big encouraging factor. And you know, my time frame is longer for the Bitcoin. I think I've told you my thinking it could be up to 80,000 or more for a coin, and you know, it's trading in the mid to high 20s, and that time frame could be a couple years or more. So it's like anything else. You know, you can own gold and to be upset that it's not 3,000, but you know, it trades between, you know, 1,400 and 2,000 back and forth for a number of years, and there's some trading opportunities along the way. So sort of a perma bull on the Bitcoin. I like cryptos overall, but you know, Bitcoin, you know, because of Larry Fink and BlackRock and the fact that it's probably, you know, the steadfast name and I guess quote unquote safest out there, you might want to consider owning a part of an ETF as part of your portfolio.
Mark, what's going on the geocosmic front?
Well, I think this weekend, you know, I have to pull it up here. We have the partial solar eclipse.
Yeah, it starts at 8:08 a.m. in Vancouver on Saturday.
Right. So it does pass over, right? Mm-hmm. So you do get to see it. I don't know if it hits here in the Arizona. I'm trying to pull up the article while we're talking about it here. But let's see. Basically, it's called the Ring of Fire eclipse because it doesn't actually cover the whole sun. And there's a little sketch here. You can go to spaceweather.com and pull it up. They actually have a little animation of the movement of the eclipse. So it's coming up this weekend. So that's probably the biggest story in the, you know, in the geocosmic that I can think of. You know, we can talk about pending earthquakes and volcanoes and all kind of fun stuff. But this Ring of Fire is the cool thing this weekend. So that's sort of it. At the moment, the only other thing I can think of is you know, where we are on the lunar cycles, and we do have a lunar cycle coming up the 14th of the month. And outside of that, let's watch the Ring of Fire and see if you can see it this weekend. You know, these things are just not coincidence or accidental. You know, here suddenly this Ring of Fire appears at a time war is going on in the Mideast. You know, it's just cycles out there. You know, you can never pinpoint exactly the planetary positions. A lot of people who are astrologers look at, you know, the intersections and conjunctions and so forth of things in the solar system. You got this Ring of Fire coming up now, and it's just interesting how all these things occur that are geocosmic and also man-related, and, you know, sort of simultaneously or near simultaneously. I just think it's fascinating stuff. That's why I like to look at it all and say, you know, there's a big eclipse coming or a new full moon coming we have a change of seasons. You know, we had the autumnal equinox in September, and now we've got the winter solstice coming up in late December. What will be happening around those time frames? And it's a force of nature, and it has something to do with how humans act and don't act, and it's very powerful stuff. So yeah, the best answer I can give you is the solar ring of fire this weekend. But let's see what else comes up.
I was automatically going to say it'll probably rain in Vancouver, and there's a 70% chance of that. Now, one phenomena that is really interesting with an eclipse, take a look at the shadow of the leaves on the ground, reflected on the ground. There's a crescent bitten out of each one of them from the shape of the moon. It's really interesting. I took pictures of it the last time we had an eclipse.
Was that a total eclipse you're referring
to? No, it was not.
Oh, okay. So the leaves respond to the...
Well, not the leaves, the shadow of the leaves.
Oh, the shadow, that's
the shadow of the leaves will have a crescent shape bitten out of them. It's really interesting.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. I don't know whether I'm going to be a participant in this ring of fire this weekend or not. I think it tracks northeast of Arizona. So I think you're going to have a better look than us, but I'll double check.
I'll book a flight above the clouds.
Let's do it.
Okay. Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Talk to you next week. Thanks for having me, Jim.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.